A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's always football season here at VSiN, which is why we've already released our NFL betting guide. Our NFL betting guide will help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with in-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems from proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19. Get your digital copy of the VSiN NFL betting guide, or take advantage of our summer kickoff special and get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $175. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Kelly actively practicing the pronunciation of names of Tour de France cyclists. Yes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I got him down.
He's working on it. We'll get to Tour de France talk momentarily. But Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us here for a second segment from the Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. Before we get to your tour update, one last thing. So, Iga yesterday, the world number one, from death's door, two match points against her, against Belinda Bencic, who I was saying earlier when we did our rankings here personally, our personal tennis and golf rankings. I had Bencic my fifth best player in the world. Like, I love Bencic. So to me, that was one. Yeah, I'm way ahead of, not way ahead of, but I'm way higher on her than the consensus. All court we're talking, not per surface. I'm just talking all court. So that was a match I was worried about, but I didn't think it would get to match points. We were just talking off air. I don't remember Iga staving off match points in any match, but do you feel, because I do, that going through something like that makes her way more dangerous now?
Yeah, it definitely does. And there's a pretty common kind of outcome that you see a lot with not the Iga type of players, but the players who are maybe like one rung below her, you know, that can't get over the hump. They can't kind of get over the mental demons of like slams that they came ever so close. Mm-hmm. And then they get into that slam situation. They survive match points. And then they're like, oh yeah, I can do this.
Yep.
And it kind of gives them like the mental edge to kind of overcome adversity as they go through the slams. The most famous example clearly of this was Wozniacki in the Australian Open in like round two against a player that she had no business being. Jenna Fett, maybe?
Wow.
She faced match points against Fett. She overcomes it. She wins that. She comes back from the dead in that match. It was like round two. And it's like, oh, man. Like if she's got if she's got that in the, you know, the back of her mind now that she can overcome these situations, she's a much more dangerous player because, you know, she was to that point the kind of player that you expected when the going gets tough, she got going. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of Iga kind of overcoming match points is something, again, I haven't looked hard at her resume, but that felt like the first time I've ever seen her overcome adversity to that degree.
If it has happened, it happened way early in her career. Yeah.
Right. And not in a time or place where it led to her winning.
Yes.
Right. Like her slams on her resume are like one way traffic Iga in every match. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of characteristic of, you know, when she went out and when it was a surprise, it was a lot of the time where she just couldn't get over those type of moments where, you know, the match was in the balance and she, you know, she didn't find a way to get through it. And so I was kind of waiting for this because it definitely makes her a more dangerous player. This was the kind of win she needed, to kind of be able to reflect on. I don't know that it's going to lead to her surely winning this championship because there's just still so many really, really talented grass players.
Yep.
And for what it's worth, she still doesn't look perfectly comfortable on the surface. All that being said, if you want to bet for tomorrow, I think 5.5 games against Svitolina is too low. My modal and median outcomes there are Iga by 6 games. So I'm going to lay the 5.5 at -102 right now.
I like it. Yeah, I'm not nearly as worried about Svitolina as I was.
No,
yep.
No. Yep. Not at all. Svitolina is a great story. She's a happy to be here kind of player at the quarterfinal level.
By the way, you see that yesterday, yeah, Azarenka. So again, this is the politics of Azarenka, mm-hmm. who's from Belarus. Svitolina from Ukraine. Svitolina famously will not shake the hand of Russian or Belarusian players. And Azarenka, knowing this upon losing to her yesterday, doesn't go for the handshake and gives her the, you know, the distant acknowledgement wave. She then leaves the court. The crowd doesn't get it that she was being deferential, and they boo Azarenka off the court. It was brutal. I was like, oh, God, be better, fans. Come on.
I'm desperately waiting to get geopolitics out of tennis.
Yes.
Anytime now, happily get it out of the discussion here. I thought you were going to go in a different direction, where Svitolina's most her noteworthy story this morning was she gave away her Harry Styles tickets because she had to play in Wimbledon, and Harry Styles found out and basically said, "Come anytime."
Wow.
So there's a little connection there.
True Dinsick with breaking news. They're well done.
So no, just well so Svitolina is here. She's happy to be here, in my opinion, and I think Iga takes care of her pretty comfortably tomorrow. So
okay,
that's the only look on the board for me. I Pegula should not be this price probably, but Vondrousova is so mercurial. I bet on her in days where she should be the favorite, and she just no shows. So I am probably going to abstain there, but
yeah. I think that's properly priced. Yeah.
I'm kind of shocked that Pugula is the favorite, honestly.
Oh no. Her grass numbers are a little better, but yes, I mean, could I see an upset in quotes? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's not much of a margin between them, by the way, real quick before tour, did you add any football bets over the last couple weeks?
Haven't done anything. I'm still going through the process now. Completed reviewing all the schedules and kind of thinking through how sequencing will play into sort of the season unfolding. Sequencing of games and schedule. Kind of fascinating. The big losers on the schedule were the Chiefs and the Chargers. Chargers' schedule is unforgivably tough. There are scheduled losses all throughout. It's going to be really tough for them to overachieve, I think. And then the Chiefs down the home stretch, 5 games in a row, they're at a rest disadvantage. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Five in a row.
And it's against teams that matter. You know, they have a rest disadvantage against the Chargers, the Bengals, the Bills. The NFL, it feels like, is sending a message that they want the AFC championship in a different venue this year.
It's, you know, it's interesting because last year they started the first seven weeks of the season for the Chiefs. I referred to it as a gauntlet last year. My God, if they can get out, 4-3, they would take it. And then you look up afterwards, you're like, oh, look where they are. Right. And not to mention in the postseason. So yeah, this is like the latest iteration of that. Will it make a difference? One would think, right? But would it surprise you if it didn't in the end? That wouldn't either, I guess.
Yeah, 6 games actually in a row. They have a rest disadvantage week 12 to week 17. So I don't even know how, like, it takes a pretty impressive amount of it can't be random, right? They're playing on normal rest, but their opponent happens to have an advantage in every single game.
It's gotta be. Yes.
Yeah. It's Vegas at Vegas, at Green Bay, Buffalo at home, at New England, Vegas on the road. Somehow Vegas has a rest advantage against the Chiefs twice. Not that that's going to matter.
Yeah.
Cincinnati has a rest, but Cincinnati, Buffalo, New England, and Green Bay all with the rest advantage in the final quarter of the season is kind of rough.
When I get back from vacation, let's do a deeper dive into scheduling quirks like this. I'd be interested in a couple weeks. We have 90 seconds on the tour. Kelly, what are the two guys that are in?
Oh, it's a coin flip situation at this point, Gil.
Yeah.
Tadej Pogačar, -125 to win it all.
Sure.
Jonas Vingegaard, +110 to win it all.
Vingegaard?
I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing.
Drew, is that accurate? Was that what he just said? Yeah.
He was close enough.
Okay.
For whatever reason, the G-A-A-R-D that ends Jonas's surname, they just kind of give it the go, LSU Tigers, G-E-A-U-X.
Really? Isn't there that actor, Skarsgård? We say Skarsgård, don't we, when we talk about that actor? So is it Skarsgård?
For sure, but it's Vingegaard.
Vingegaard.
I don't know
he
why.
He just wants to be cool because he rides a bike. No. So it says go at the end.
Vingegaard.
But Tade and Jonas are in a dead heat at this point. It's the most competitive Tour de France that I can remember. If you haven't been watching, it has been extremely entertaining. Today is a rest day, so if you want to catch up on some of the highlights, it's a good time to do so. They started in the Basque region of Spain and France. They went to the Pyrenees. They had back-to-back really, really difficult but very beautiful mountain stages in the Pyrenees. On stage 5, Jonas, who has the stronger team, put together just a compelling, compelling stage, pulled away, put a minute on Pogacar. It seemed like the tour was, like the yellow jersey was, a fait accompli. It was going to be a repeat for Vindigo. But then in stage six, Pogacar just tactically superior. He hung on the wheel of Vindigo for much of the, the hardest climbing. And then, came back and just kind of put, dropped the hammer on him. And so, yeah, this is a coin flip. I would take the plus money on Vindigo, though, with the prices Kelly mentioned.
Plus money on Vindigo. Kelly, trivia question. Most viewed sporting event in the world, Super Bowl, World Cup, or Tour de France?
World Cup.
Incorrect. Tour de France.
Wow.
It's really true. Yeah.
Tour de France. No way.
Yes. Given the length of time and how many countries are watching, it's really true. Drew, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, best of luck, guys.
Drew Densig, everybody. Summer League talk next.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Still to come this hour, Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke. Paul Spohr standing by. Talk Major League Baseball. Kelly, before we get to Spohr, I want to... It's not often that we stop and thank a specific listener, but... sometimes people are just so unbelievably generous. Joe, some time ago, remember he brought me the Swiatek tennis card and the Swiatek signed ball, and you're just like, wow, thank you so much. Richie in New Jersey stopped by the studio on Friday, and I just want to thank him. We have lots of people who stop by the studio, to say hello, and we're always flattered because the South Point is not an easy sort of walk from anywhere. You got to make an effort to come here if you're not staying here. So we're always flattered by it. But Richie in New Jersey stopped before the show on Friday to talk to me. He just really was. He loves the show. He loves the network. He wrote a handwritten 3-page note to us. It would just couldn't have been nicer. And he got us gifts. One of the gifts, Kelly is proudly I just want to show this one gift.
It's amazing.
It's Brent Musburger doll from Rocky II. Brent was in there. So that was one of the gifts, and the others were even more generous. So just want to, again, just shout out Richie in New Jersey, because we are always humbled by anybody who does that. But Richie, it is not lost on me the effort you put into all that you sent. So I just wanted to send him a shout out. Paul Spohr joins us from Austin, Texas. It is the All-Star break. Home Run Derby tonight, All-Star Game tomorrow night. Great time to sort of talk Major League Baseball and reset headed into the second half of the season. Technically, the second half. Spohr joins us now. How you doing, Paulie?
Yo, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing very well. Do you bet on the Home Run Derby? Do you partake in that kind of thing?
Sometimes. Sometimes I get in pools. I've bet on it on occasion. I don't have anything going this year, but I've been known to. I love the new format. Ever since started in Cincy, the Todd Frazier one, I've enjoyed it quite a bit. I hated it before that. I would turn it on, and then 5 minutes in, I'd realize this is going to be 3 hours of Berman saying back, 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 back.
I was gonna say.
And then just, go to doing something else. I'd leave it on, but I would go to do something else.
Oh, so
but
clever.
Now I find it great. I think it's excellent.
If I just said to you, what's your hunch? Yes, I'm not going to hold you to it. If you had a hunch as to who's going to win this tonight, who would you say?
I got a little vibe on Adley. I love the guy, man. I really think he's switch hitting Buster Posey. And I know that neither Buster Posey nor Adley has shown obscene power, but you get in a home run derby and guys can surprise you too. I think we tend to kind of judge off a body type and be like, oh, well, this guy's not going to be the guy to do it, type of thing. And look, Pete Alonso's become the god of it, and
yes, he
fits the stereotype of it. So I understand the inclination for that. But there's been guys in the past that don't kind of meet the mold of what a home run hitter would be that can win it. So if you're going for gut hunch and asking where I'm at there, it's definitely Adley.
Yeah, is Mookie the smallest player to ever participate in this? Pete Alonso has won two of these already. He goes for a third tonight. I have a hunch as to who I think. I'll save it for later in the show with Kelly. I do a segment. Let me take this opportunity to ask you a bunch of baseball questions heading into the post All-Star break. And it's just sort of a mid-season heat check on stuff. Mm-hmm. Here we go. We start with the National League Cy Young will go to, ultimately?
Spencer Strider.
Yes. Say it again.
Spencer Strider.
I agree completely. You can still get Spencer Strider at 6-1. I completely agree.
Love that guy.
I also think he's got a shot at 20 wins, right? Which is, you know, playing for the Braves. He's just unbelievable. What did he have, 11 strikeouts and one walk the other night? Just incredible.
He's unreal. And, like, you know, I've talked about how I'm not a big wins guy. You know that. But I still love a gaudy record. So
yes.
If you're talking like 20-5, that's hot, right? Like,
yeah.
Everything else is going to be there to say that his stats are there. I'm not voting for somebody because they're 20-5, but that's just cool. It's a little icing on top of the cake that I know is team dependent without a doubt, but a big win total with a single digit loss total still looks cool.
It's just cool. And I think the way I want to say this, first of all, I don't understand the difference in pricing between Strider and the Gallons of the world. I don't. And the thing about the wins is no one likes analytics more than Paul and I do. But it's almost like the pendulum, let's see if you agree with this, it's almost like the pendulum has swung so much on wins and losses that to get 20 wins might strangely be this cool thing now where we're like, oh, and he had 20 wins? That is out. You know, like it's this new, because it's almost like retro cool.
And it can, yeah, and it could almost be a proxy for volume too,
yes.
Right? Like you were going 6+ in all your games. Now, with that Braves team, you might only have to go 5 pretty consistently to get the dub because they take care of you. But that's the thing about wins that I think even some of the stat head folks don't really understand why it had value back in the day is because you threw 8 innings at a minimum. You were basically run off the team if you couldn't go 8+ every time out. So your record did give some indication of how you pitched. The reason there was the pushback in the recent era here is because as we moved to 5-inning, 6-inning pitchers, there was a lot more volatility. So trying to tell me that somebody's 18 wins meant that they were automatically good, even though they had a 4.70 ERA versus a guy who had 6 wins but had a 3.20 ERA, that's where the pushback comes from. But I think with today's game being such a 5 innings and you're out, you can get a little something from wins. You should always look at other stats. But I do think like a 20-win season is going to be an indicator of a particular amount of volume that you're going to get to.
The New York Yankees will miss the playoffs, yes or no?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not. I wasn't too bought in on this team coming into the season. Now they're going to get Rodon back. That's really nice. I don't really see where the offense is coming together. Even getting Judge back, right? We've seen them without Judge. They've been a complete nightmare. He'll come back, and obviously he'll help, but what coalesces around him? And who are they going to go out and get, too? Because you can talk trades and all that, but who exactly are they going to go out and get? So, yeah, I think they are going to come up a bit short.
What is amazing about them is that, first of all, one game out of a playoff spot currently, mm-hmm. one game out of a playoff spot, and somehow only 7 losses in, you know, out of the AL East lead, which if you think about who they're running out there every night, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hitters, 6, 7, 8, 9 specifically, where you're like,
yeah.
How are they doing this? Like, do you view this as Brian Cashman malpractice to some degree?
I know there's a lot of Yankee fans that absolutely do. I definitely think that they've taken some turns that I wouldn't necessarily agree with. I think Cashman is a really good GM on the whole, and his credentials are there, but they haven't won in quite a while. They have all the resources in the world times a million. So, yeah, I think you got to start looking inward a little bit and saying, like, why aren't you the behemoth? Why is Tampa Bay and Baltimore very clearly ahead of them right now in terms of how we feel about those three teams going forward? Even the Rays, though, obviously they're coming back to the pack. You can't hemorrhage an ace every 6 weeks and stay afloat. The Rays are learning that. But yeah, I do wonder if the Yankees have to start looking inward and realizing that, hey, certain things that we do are not getting it done to where we're fighting and scrapping every year. Yes, it's a hard division, but they're supposed to be the powerhouse.
The Miami Marlins, who currently have the second best record in the National League, the fourth best record in all of baseball, will miss the playoffs. Yes or no?
I don't think so. I think the pitching is going to hold them. I really do. And, you know, they've got some hitting. Would love to see them go out, get a hitter or two. They don't have to go big. I mean, they can go big, though, too, if they want. If they want to get a guy who isn't just like a rental and they get something a bit more substantial and they trade a big arm, I think that's on the table for them, too. But, yeah, I think that they've banked enough here and their pitching is so strong that it can cover the fact that the hitting is still pretty weak.
Yeah, I'm looking currently to see to make the playoffs, to miss the playoffs. Yankees +130, to miss the playoffs. Yankees plus 130 of the teams we just mentioned. And the Miami Marlins plus 190 to miss the playoffs. So it's always, of course, price dependent.
Exactly. It is going to be price dependent. I don't think I want to jump on that for the Marlins. I mean, that's not a bad number, but I really like this pitching, and pitching can paper over offensive deficiencies, I think, better than the inverse. A great hitting lineup papering over pitching trouble, I think, is tougher, and I think that's what Cincinnati's going to run into if they don't figure out something with some arms. And I love what they're doing. I hate to be the wet blanket on them, but I'm just nervous with who they're running out. The pivot point there would be if Green and Lodolo come back in August and they're just good to go, and then they add two studs to go with Abbott, who's been pitching well. That's still only 3/5 of a rotation. I don't know why Graham Ashcraft sucks, but yeah, I do think the Marlins with pitching over hitting have a better opportunity than the Reds, although the Reds have an easier division.
Rapid fire. Shohei Ohtani remains a member of the Angels throughout the rest of this year and into next season. True or false?
I think so.
I do too. Ellie De La Cruz overtakes Corbin Carroll and becomes the National League Rookie of the Year. Ooh, I see your expression.
Oh, man, that's so tough. I mean, obviously, if he continues to play like this, yes. I don't think he's going to continue to play like this, though. That's really the thing, because there is still the swing and miss. And no, I don't think so. I love what he's doing, though.
The most surprised team, at least as we view it right now, to make the postseason, both the American League and National League, will be. It's a little open-ended, but
I mean,
surprise conventional wisdom.
Miami, I think, would be the biggest surprise of all. And then maybe in like the American League, if you're talking like probably the Angels, because now they've fallen down and Trout's out. So I think they'd be a pretty big surprise to make it. By the way, quick correction. Ohtani will just be, he'll be a free agent after this year. So you said he'll be on the team this year and next. I don't know if he'll be on the team next year.
You don't know if he'll be next year. Okay.
No, he's a free agent after this year.
No, so I understand that. But for me, I think for sure this year, I actually think he sticks around for next year too. I could be wrong about that.
They should, but I don't know.
If it's not the Angels, closing question, if it's not the Angels next year, who will it be?
Dodgers. Ooh. Take the easy answer.
You think he wants to play there? You want the big stage?
When you get thrown enough money. Yeah, I don't think he's afraid of the big stage at all.
Okay. All right. Paul Sporer, everybody. Enjoy the Derby tonight. Enjoy the All-Star game, sir.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
Paul Sporer at Sporer. FanGraphs, where you can find most of his work. Sleeper in the Bust podcast as well. We'll come back. We'll take a look at Wimbledon, a Wimbledon update. Boys, this is getting interesting. And we'll read your tweets next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $19 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. Christopher Eubanks, 2 points away from winning this match, and Tsitsipas has had 2 break points, and Eubanks has fended them both off. So we're back to deuce. 5-4, Eubanks. Final set at Wimbledon, round of 16 between those two. Let's go under a cloud of smoke in Southern California. You can follow him on Twitter at Spreadopedia. It's our buddy Jason Weingarten. How you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. Did you catch the odds on the Eubanks match?
Pre-flop or during?
Pre-flop.
Yeah, what was he like, a $3 dog, something like that?
Was he really?
Well, no, maybe not that much. But yeah, he was a pretty hefty dog.
I wanted to bet it and I totally forgot. I keep forgetting the English tennis schedule just doesn't, I'm not paying attention to it. And I was like, "Oh man, it started."
Match.
And then I saw he was up a set or whatever, and
well, he was down
two favorite.
He was down 2-1, and he just won the match. Christopher Eubanks is headed to the quarterfinals at Wimbledon, upsetting Stefanos Tsitsipas. Congrats to all who had that one. Wow, down 2-1, coming back the lone remaining male American tennis player right now. As Coco Gauff and others clapping for him in the stands. Look at him soaking that in. Good for him. You did not have it, though, in the end.
No, I slept through it. Totally forgot it was happening.
By the way, Kvitova down a break against, I think down two breaks against Jabeur in the first set right there. So that's an ugly start for Kvitova as well. Have you been betting Wimbledon at all?
Very little. I try to stay away from tennis. I don't have much of an edge there, so I'm just throwing darts.
Okay, Rose Zhang did not win the women's U.S. Open on the LPGA side, but we talked about this last week. Alison Corpus wins it, 9-under. Rose Zhang, who I believe finished 1-over, still was top 10, T9. So anybody who bet that, congratulations. Did you bet her more than just outrights? Did you win a top 10 bet on her?
Yeah, but I also had top 5 and first round leader, so no luck there.
Yeah. She never really got it going.
It wasn't bad. It just, you know, she's 3 starts into her career and got a win and 2 top 10, so, you know, can't really hate on her, but she was never in contention really.
Never in contention. Never really made a run at that tournament this weekend, but congratulations again to Corpus. Baseball, home run derby tonight, Jason. I know you love the derby. I thought you were going to go to this tonight, by the way, in Seattle.
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. You're going to the All-Star game.
Yeah, All-Star.
Oh, okay. Are you betting the derby tonight?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that I will bet on it because what am I going to do? You know, watch this and not have money on it or something?
That's right. That sounds ridiculous.
But in years past, I've bet a lot of money on the home run derby. And this year I just don't see much, you know, like Pete Alonso, not even 4-1. I'd love to bet him. And you got all the Cuban guys. I love the Cubans, and you got a Rosarena and Adolis Garcia in the first round. So, you know, that's kind of a bummer. We're going to get one of them knocked out immediately. And I can't really like Vlad versus Mookie Betts. What side are you going to pick there? The only thing I'm pretty convinced on is Adley Rutschman is the hometown pick, you know, because he's from the Pacific Northwest, went to Oregon State. Other than that, no offense, but I feel like he's the least, you know, worthy of being in this competition. We could have had so many better hitters than him. So I'm fading Rutschman in round one. I laid like -220 with Luis Robert, who, if it wasn't for Ohtani, might be in the MVP conversation in the AL right now.
Yeah. By the way, you totally faked me out. I thought you were about to say you bet Adley Rutschman, but you went the other way. You laid the wood with Luis Robert there.
Yeah, because his dad's pitching to him, and that's one of the things to keep in mind, like home run derby, really about the pitchers as much as the hitters. You know, Pete Alonso's got his old coach. I think he works for the Nationals now. The guy like knows how to time the pitches to get the most, you know, to get the most pitches in. Adley Rutschman's going to have his dad throwing to him, which means they likely haven't, you know, practiced or done anything. And I'm sure it'll be a cool moment, but typically when I hear dads throwing to the player, I'm fading them.
I like, and this is complete hunch, but it's going to end early, or it could, you know, I'm going to find out early, I think, how this goes. But I think Julio Rodriguez at +140, obviously going up against Alonso, it's his park. He's the guy I'm playing. Just going to, you know, not a big bet. Obviously, it's the home run derby. It's not anything scientific here. But I think that represents the most value. Him at 5-1 to win it, +290 to make the finals. You don't like that?
I don't hate it. I love Julio Rodriguez. Like you said, it's his park.
Yeah.
This park does have a little bit of a home run problem, especially if the wind's blowing in like it's projected tonight. It's supposed to be like in 7 miles from from center field. But balls don't carry in the outfield here, which is a bit of a problem. But like you mentioned, it's Julio Rodriguez's home park, so he knows how to hit here. Also a little interested in Adolis Garcia. You know, but the problem is, it's like, I like Adolis Garcia. Every one of these guys, with the exception of Adley Rutschman, who's still very good, every one of these guys is a monster home run hitter. I can't make heads or tails of anything here, honestly.
What about you? Here's the thing about the home run derby evolution from a betting standpoint. You can bet this so many different ways. There's most home runs in round one, which is always an interesting thing, right? Somebody will jack up 28 to 30 of them, and you're like, okay, well, I can cash that bet. So Vlad, by the way, most home runs in round one, is the short shot at +280, followed by Rodriguez, followed by Pete Alonso, which, by the way, that's what makes this interesting. So Alonso's a favorite over Julio Rodriguez in the head-to-head. Like, Rodriguez is like a plus 130 dog, but Rodriguez is a shorter shot to hit more home runs in the first round. So, like, look for things like that, which are anomalous, right? And then you can also bet, you know, the longest home run. So it's set at who would you bet for longest home run, by the way?
Well, I was actually going that's funny you just mentioned that. Longest distance is the prop I'm most excited about, and I was literally trying to bet that when the show called to go on air, and I see it starting to move. I'm trying to bet that. Hold on.
You're talking about the distance of the longest home run, which is also a prop.
Yeah, the distance.
Yeah. That is set at 490 and a half at DraftKings. 490 and a half. Under 490 and a half, minus 125. You like the under?
That's so long. Yeah. Especially if the wind's blowing in.
Especially if the wind's blowing in. Absolutely.
I'd love to see it. You know, it's the Home Run Derby. It's one of my more favorite events to watch. You know, it's always entertaining. You know, hopefully someone jacks one 500 feet. I'd love to see it, but I'm going under.
Yeah, I like that bet too. Would you bet a player with the longest home run, or would you stay away from that?
I don't know how to. That's the thing. Like, you can go through and see who's hitting the longest home runs. You can go through like stadium data and see who historically hits the longest home runs. I guess I'd probably think Julio Rodriguez because it's his home ballpark, but I got nothing on which player is going
to
do it.
I like your under 490 and a half. That's not available everywhere, but for those who have access to that, I love the under on that, especially, again, with Jason's report on the wind. Okay, we only have 90 seconds here, Jason. All-Star break always gives us an opportunity to just reset. Give me the single best bet that you like that's available out there right now. Maybe it's a division play. Maybe it's a pennant. Maybe it's the World Series. Maybe it's an award. Where do you think the most value lies right now?
Well, I was going to, I was really hoping through the weekend that Spencer Strider's odds were going to stay slightly higher for a little bit longer. The market seems like it's reacted there. It also seems like it has caught up with Blake Snell, whose numbers are even better than Spencer Strider over the last month or so. So I guess there's not a ton of value left in the Cy Young race. I'd say Gunnar Henderson is still the guy I have my eye on in the AL Rookie of the Year race. His numbers are really trending up. He's up there with George Young. Masataka Yoshida also good, but Henderson 3-1, Young +120. I don't understand the gap between the two of them, especially with the Orioles coming on strong. You know, they might even contend for the division when all is said and done at the end of the second half.
You think the Yankees make the postseason?
So hard. I mean, someone's getting left out. I think it might be them. I'll tell you who's not making the postseason. It's going to be the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I think they're quickly recognizing the writing on the wall.
Yeah. Jason, always a pleasure, man. Enjoy the week. Enjoy the Derby tonight.
Thank you. Should be fun. Don't have any bets as I'm running off today, but good luck this week, everybody.
Jason Weingarten. Kelly and I coming back, wrapping things up next.